House Committee on Budget Prioritization, Monday, December 10th, 2001, 8:30 a.m., Hearing Room F.
I'd like to call to order the House Interim Special Committee on Budget Prioritization. We have hearings scheduled all of this week. Just to kind of preface the work that we have to do, this I expect will be a long and arduous week, and by Friday afternoon we'll all know each other much better than we do right now. The charge of the committee is, of course, to receive and gather information on from the state agencies and interested parties relative to rebalancing the 0103 state budget. We are here to seek solutions, to gather information that will enable us to seek solutions. We have encouraged people to submit to the committee written testimony. We'll make copies of that testimony and distribute them to the members of the committee, and we will also make that written testimony part of the permanent record. We are under a very tight time frame here. Those of you who've looked ahead to the schedule that we have, it is going to be very critical for us to stay as close as we can to that schedule in order that everyone gets a chance to speak their piece and give the information to the process that they want to give to us. I would ask people to be respectful of the time constraints that the committee faces, and to acknowledge that all of us have a very, very strong emotional investment in the budget, and that this is going to be an emotionally taxing process for us, and we need to be respectful of that also. I would continually remind people throughout this process that we're here to seek solutions to the rebalance issues that the budget faces. And with that, the first thing on our agenda this morning is the adoption of our committee rules. The members of the committee have a copy of the proposed rules in front of them. And in light of that,
Madam Chair,
Representative Butler,
I'd make a motion that the Special Interim Committee on Budget Prioritization Rules be adopted.
There's a motion on the floor to adopt the Special Interim Committee rules for the Budget Prioritization Committee. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is passed. What I would like to do at this point is bring forward the Legislative Fiscal Office and the budget and management folks to give us an overview of the process and of the documentation that they've given the committee to work from. Good morning, Mr. Rocco.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office. I'm here today to just get things started for you. Teresa McHugh would like to be here, but she's at a meeting right now giving instructions to agency heads on how this process will work for them during the next this week. I provided you with a memo just to outline some of the things that that we're going to be talking about during this week. We've provided you with a binder that that looks something like this, which has all of the program reduction options in it. To organize that, we've provided you with a numbered tab system in the front, and it's broken out by program area. There's in each of the program areas, there's a listing of the program reduction options provided by agencies. Then there is a dividing sheet, and then behind the dividing sheet are the administrative reduction options that agencies provided to the governor's office. As the chair has mentioned, this is a very aggressive schedule over the remainder of this week, so we hope that you can cover everything, but there is some flexibility built into the schedule at certain points, so if you need extra time, I think we can work that out. I've also provided you with a memo just to give you some background on what is going to be happening this week. I've described the materials that are included in the binder. The way these materials were developed, when the budget revenue shortfall was determined to in September of this year, the governor immediately asked for a 2% unscheduling of agency general fund and lottery fund budgets through the allotment process. This was done for two reasons. One was to let the bond markets know that there was action being taken to keep the state within balance, and that was an effective strategy. The other was to alert agencies to the fact that they needed to reduce spending. The governor at the same time asked for two sets of material from agencies. The first were a set of 10% reduction options for administrative activities in 2% increments, and the second was a 10% program reduction option in 2% increments. The administrative reductions were designed to be short-term in nature. These would be activities that would primarily only affect the current biennium, such things as holding vacancies open longer, reducing travel, reducing purchases of non-essential items, things like that. Those administrative reductions were received, analyzed, and categorized into four categories, and there's a key in the binder that describes what those four categories are for you. Agencies are being directed that anything in the first three of those categories have been taken from their budgets, and these are being eliminated from their budget along with within this 2% allotment reduction that's going on, the unscheduling. The agencies were also directed to come up with 10% of their total program, of their total general fund and lottery fund budget in the 2% increments. And that's primarily what you're going to be hearing about this week, are those reduction options that the agencies have determined. There's several issues I wanted to go over with you regarding this information. First, these are purely agency-determined reduction options. The Legislative Fiscal Office and Budget Management Division have reviewed these, but we are not taking ownership of them. We've looked at them, and all of the impact characterizations that you see listed on your tables are from the agency. They haven't been edited or changed by LFO or BAM. I think, as you saw in the charge of the committee, you're here this week just to discuss these and to hear how these program reductions would affect state government. So these are being presented for informational purposes. There are no decisions that have been made on any of these. Agencies are being directed right now to do three things. One is to describe the program reductions and the effect these reductions will have on their delivery of services, to discuss the principles that they use when they determine what program reduction options to take, and they're also supposed to discuss what kinds of services they will be able to provide when they have this reduced budget, whatever that reduction comes up to at the end of this process. These the materials that you have are not final because we received these at 5 p.m. on Friday, so they're still being refined, constantly being worked on. In some cases, we've tried to not have special purpose appropriations included in these reduction options, since those appropriations have not yet been made. They're currently in the emergency fund, so those were not supposed to be included, so we're checking on some of those. Some agencies you'll hear already have a caseload issue because they have caseload growth that has exceeded what was budgeted in their 0103 budget, and those normally would be dealt with through an emergency board process. However, with the special session pending, I think we're going to deal with those all at once. There are some agencies that will have to provide you separately when they come forward because they weren't able to be included in this listing that you currently have. And we've noticed there's some duplication between the administrative reductions and some of the program reductions, and we're trying to clean those up as we go along. And again, I just wanted to point out that these are not the preferences of anybody at this point. They're not the governor's reduction options. They're not approved by legislative leadership, LFO, or BAM. They are simply available for discussion purposes. And during the hearings, we will have agencies come forward to discuss these with you. We'll have legislative fiscal office and budget management staff sitting over at this table, and they will be here for answering questions or responding to any inquiries that the committee may have.
Committee members, questions or comments for Mr. Rocco? Representative Knoth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ken, has anybody asked you or legislative fiscal to come up with other reduction options other than what we've been given at this point?
Madam Chair, Representative Knoth, yes, we're working on other kinds of information. We're looking at reductions that were included in the original governor's budget that were not taken by the legislature last time. We're looking at reductions that agencies provided in their request budget at the direction of the governor that were not taken. We're looking at alternative revenue options. We're looking at other kinds of one-time or first-time programs that were funded in 0103. So there are several other lists being developed that will be made available when the governor and the legislature are looking at reductions to the total budget.
Further questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just process question more than anything else, I think, and that is, and it's directed also to Mr. Rocco as well, and that is, are we considering, with the potential of any budget reductions, any modifications of the requirements of the various agencies who may be called upon to make budget reductions? For instance, in education, are we going to demand the same kinds of reporting and the same kind of high level of requirements that have been previously required of education by the legislature through the administrative process and through the statutory processes? Do we have any feel as to what those issues are? We're just going to look at the areas and say we're going to demand the same high bar performance from the agencies and to do it with less money?
Hey, I'm going to take that as a somewhat rhetorical question because I obviously am not in a position to answer it, but I would imagine that those are going to be very robustly discussed as this process moves forward.
Thank you. As I say, it is a process question, so.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, to assist with that, while we're looking at these, collecting information on program reductions, we're also identifying any kinds of statutory changes that may be required if those options were in fact taken. So
Thank you. We're
trying to do that.
Further questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Rocco. I would just like to close in saying that you and your department have been burning the midnight oil for a long time on this one, and your efforts are appreciated. The chair will call at this time the Department of Education and the State School Fund to come forward and make their budget presentation to the committee. Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Bunn, Superintendent of Public Instruction with offices at 255 Capitol Street here in Salem. To my right is Kate Dixon, Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction, and to my left, Dave Fazier from our Business and Management Office. We appreciate the opportunity to come before you today and make comments. We wish, as you do, that it were under more pleasant circumstances in terms of the issues we face. I would like to say first that there are absolutely no winning ways to cut budgets. There just are not. And any of the budget cuts we put forward to you with reductions represent programs that we believe in deeply, believe make a difference for children in the schools of the state of Oregon, and the proposals put forward are in no way a recommendation that those are not important programs. Another fundamental point that I wanted to make is that I believe and we believe that Oregonians are looking to the Oregon legislature to provide for and assure stable funding for schools in the state of Oregon. And as you struggle with the issues of what cuts must occur, what revenue should be present, and what cash reserves should or should not be used, I think that fundamental issue needs to be central to your discussion. How do we assure and deliver on the promise and commitment that Oregon schools will have stable funding throughout both good times and bad times to assure that our children have the kind of education that Oregonians have asked for? I wanted to give a bit of context for our presentation on reductions. And it begins with the mission statement of the Department of Education, and that is that we are in relentless pursuit of each student's success. And we ask you, as we do, to keep in mind that effort. How do we maximize the success for each student as we move forward with this effort? Our goals are to demonstrate responsible stewardship and leadership for Oregon's educational system, including supporting adequate and stable funding. Provide each student a successful personal academic learning experience in a safe, supportive educational environment. Build the capacity of our schools to assure each student's educational success. And I would ask you, as we look at these issues, how do we do this work for the long term to assure that we are providing cuts and continuing program that assures the greatest opportunity for long-term success? Supporting high academic standards, Oregon's Education Act for the 21st century, the SIM and CAM, how do we continue our work there, the important element of reading, an assessment system that actually works for teachers, students, and parents, the data integrity program that is so critical to moving forward with all of our efforts, the Oregon Pre-K program, children coming to school ready to learn, diversity, English language learners, special education. The goal to work aggressively to close the achievement gap. We talked a great deal at the legislative session about low-performing schools, dropout prevention, and teacher administrator mentorship. How do we do those programs? Provide leadership for cutting-edge research and best practices, and develop partnerships throughout education to expand and assure quality for our 550,000 students. I want to suggest to you our design principles for the budget work we are now in. A high priority went to those activities that have the greatest potential of helping students, that reflect the legislatures, the state boards, and the Department of Education's vision, values, and priorities, to bring forward a long-term view. As the governor said, not to thin the soup, but to assure that the most critical programs continue. A quality and diverse workforce is critical in accomplishing the ODE and state board mission. Align general and federal funds to assure maximum effectiveness and efficiency. A high priority for implementation efficiencies in all of our programs and all projects and activities subject to agency-wide efficiencies. When we did our budget work, we brought in cabinet over an intense three-week period all of the associates in charge of special education, professional technical education, all of the areas together to work for this effort and to assure that it occurs. As you know, the state budget is just under $12 billion. The Oregon Department of Education's budget is a little over $282 million, and the state school fund just under $5.2 billion. so that you have a clear understanding of our actual operations at the department. Department operations take about 16% of our budget, just over $45 million. Special schools take just over $16 million, and grant and aid programs take $220 million plus, 78% of the budget. So just to reflect briefly on the reality of those dollar figures, when you have 78% of our budget, or $220 million plus in grant and aid, we cannot reduce our budget 10% without significant cuts in direct services to schools. And that translates, in fact, to about $27 million. In cuts to schools in the state of Oregon. And we're here today, among other things, to share with you and struggle with you on the decisions on how we cut those services to schools. The first thing we did was administrative cuts directly at the Department of Education under a total of just under $12 million of administration work. And we did about $1.1 million in cuts. Then, as was described to you by the DAS representative, the program reductions were in 2% increments, and I would ask you to go now to the handout we provided, Oregon Department of Education, 5 budget reduction packages by 2% increments. The first of those increments provides for reductions in the Data Integrity Assurance Program, in the Database Initiative Enterprise, and comes to a bit in excess of, and the Database Initiative Collection and Consolidation Program comes to around $5 million. I would take a moment to ask.
Yes. Mr. Bunn, Representative Starr has a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a kind of an overview. Big picture question before we get into the details. Not having served in the Ways and Means Subcommittee during the session, the question I had is, what was the department's overall budget increase from the previous biennium to this biennium? That's kind of a big picture question.
I'll ask Dave Fazier to comment on that.
Representative Starr, members of the committee, Dave Fazier from Oregon Department of Education. I do have those figures broken out in the form on the that you have in front of you. The Department Operations budget for 1999-2001 general fund was $42,688,162, and you have the 2001-2003 figures in front of you. Would that breakout be helpful for you? Or you're looking overall?
I'm just like a percentage amount.
And would, with or without state school fund?
Then, yeah, without.
Okay.
Why don't we, if we might be allowed to continue, that calculation will be made, and then Representative Starr, Madam Chair, we would provide that to you.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I'll ask at this time Kate Dixon to spend a little time going through the individual breakout of the cut items.
As Superintendent Bunn just referred to, we have the first 2% increment on page 1 of your handout. And most of, unfortunately, those cuts in the or reductions in that first increment will be part of our data initiative projects. And also our ability to collect and analyze data statewide on student performance. The second set increment on page 2, it continues our data integrity assurance project would be cut by $2.7 million and a second increment of cut. We would cut additionally $350,000 from ODE operations. And we'd also reduce some of our grant and aid programs, as stated on page 2. The next page, continuing with our overview, page 3 is our third 2% reduction. And again, we would be cutting some additional resources, which pretty much cuts out our entire package for data integrity assurance effort, and we also would be cutting back $1 million in our TESA program, and we also would be reducing our pre-kindergarten program by $1.5 million.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, before we go on to the next area of cuts, I wanted to make a point that I think is important for your consideration. The gentleman from DAS indicated that agencies had been asked generally to come forward with cuts that did not include funding in eBoard. We pointed out to Department of Administrative Services that a significant portion of, excuse me, the gentleman from LFO. Thank you for the correction. we pointed out to DAS in our early work that a significant piece of base budget money was in the eBoard for our work. And in addition, we had a larger proportional part of our budget in the eBoard than most agencies did. And that because of the large portion of grant and aid we had compared to that, we had this kind of choice to make. Either we make cuts from the administrative budget of the Department of Education, including our base budget that are in eBoard, or we cut out grant and aid programs such as the hospitals program, the regional program, early childhood intervention and prevention. And in making that kind of choice, we brought forward to DAS and to you choices that cut our budget, including items in the eBoard, rather than cutting those programs from grant and aid. Go ahead, Kate.
Okay, in the third increment, again, we are cutting some of our data projects and sort of an initial reduction in pre-kindergarten. And then in our fourth increment, we proposed reduction in our early intervention, early childhood special education program, and another reduction in our pre-kindergarten program. And then in our fifth increment, we are proposing a reduction in our early intervention, early childhood special education program. In both the early intervention, early childhood special ed program and our Oregon pre-kindergarten program, those reductions in our third, fourth, and fifth increments are reductions that will affect our increasing caseload in those two programs. And I, so essentially, we've tried to keep the current caseload at its and funded at its current capacity, and it would be the increase in the caseload that would be reduced through these projections.
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Kate. Just to clarify, these incremental reductions in the pre-K program, and then you say that it eliminates the ability to meet legislatively mandated targets for Head Start. If it's the increased caseload that you're looking at cutting, How would that be implemented? Is it an income threshold that you're talking about at each higher level, or?
Actually, it is caseload. In this case, the legislature has set forward a statute of 100% funding for Oregon Pre-K by the year 2004, and our goal for this biennium was to get to 60% by the end of 2003. And what we would have to do is we would probably have to delay that implementation.
But just to clarify, Madam Chair, are you talking about then doing that by taking all those kids that are currently in Head Start and the pre-K programs and leaving them there? Or how would some of the kids who are currently receiving the services cut out, or just
the children that are currently receiving, Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, the children that are currently receiving services, I believe would continue to receive the services. This is for new caseload.
And just to clarify further, Madam Chair and Representative Rosenbaum, the statute provides a growing level of opportunity for students or excuse me, pre-K, up to the 60% and ultimately 100% level. And we're saying we won't be able to meet the statutory targets for continuing to increase the opportunity for those kids.
Representative Winters.
Thank you. Maybe a point of further to clarify so that there isn't the confusion. I think where Representative Rosenbaum is trying to get to is that it will not, what you're talking about is your enhancement piece that you would not be able to go forward with. Is that correct, Kate?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, enhancement may not be quite the right word, but expansion.
Expansion.
Yes.
But the existing, those pre-K children that were existing would not be affected.
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, that is correct.
And Madam Chair, if we could just clarify further, the legislature has had a long-standing, deep commitment to able to meet the statutory targets for continuing to increase the opportunity for those kids.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, maybe there is a point of confusion that I have. Further to clarify so that there isn't the confusion that I have. Representative Rosenbaum is trying to get to. I think where Representative Rosenbaum is trying to get to is that it will not, what you're talking about is your enhancement piece that you would not be able to go forward with.
Madam Chair, Representative Winters.
Madam
Chair, Representative Winters, enhancement may not be quite the right word, but expansion. Yes.
But the existing, those pre-K children that were existing would not be affected.
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, that is correct.
And Madam Chair, if we could just clarify further, the legislature has had a long-standing, deep commitment to moving toward covering all of those children in poverty that are pre-K. And the decision that you are faced with is moving away from the continuation of that policy, which has been carried out in good times and bad times, and it's a tough policy choice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Dave Fager's got a number for us, and I'd like to follow up the question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Butler and Representative Starr, the increase in the general fund for Department of Education, exclusive of debt service and state school fund, was around 12% from 1999-01 to 2001-2003.
Madam Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. As I look at the various 2% levels of the cuts, do I understand that these are cuts from the 99-01? This 12% increase that Dave is reporting. Or are these cuts? Are these cuts from existing programs that existed before the 1999-01 budget was completed?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Butler, it's a combination. Our budget became at the end of the last legislative session a budget that included both pre-existing work and new work. So what this includes is a cut of things that have been there for long periods of time and things that were new.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. So, for instance, the $700,000 cut and the second 2% on page 2 of the handout here, that $700,000 cut for, instance, Frontier Learning, that's a long-standing program, or is that $700,000 of the increase which was taken during the current budget year, the 01-03 budget year?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, it's not a long-standing program, but it is a program that existed prior to this legislative session. And it is a good example of the near impossible task you and we faced. That is an absolutely outstanding program. It is a program that makes a fundamental difference for kids on the ground. It's been in place. It was in place as a result of a previous legislative session. But the kind of difficult decision we had to make, and you have to face, is do we face cutting a program like that that has significant regional impact in order to save a program that has statewide impact for each and every student in the state of Oregon?
follow-up. Madam Chair, just to follow up. I think that Representative Starr was getting to the point asking about the 12% increase that K-12 has been granted between the 9901 session and the 0103 session. And when we see the Department of Education go back and whack out items entirely that have had some tenure, certainly before the 9901 session, back those out, then basically it leads me to believe that they're feeling, and I'm assuming that's what they're doing, that there are programs that have been exalted in the most recent session which have a greater efficacy and value than long-standing programs, which may have demonstrated some degree of success. And if they did not demonstrate that degree of success, why weren't they cut out in the last session? So that's the concern that I've got is how much of the 10% really that we're really looking at here relates to the 12% of increases that we've got in the current biennium.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I can give you by way of an anecdotal example that one of the significant increases of this last legislative session was the TESA program, the computer-based testing program. It is a program that in overwhelming numbers teachers, students, parents have told us they want to make the workload less, get the same ability to get the job done, but with greater efficiency. So we said, even though we brought in a cut of $1 million in TESA, we said over the last 2 years, the legislature has sort of bulldozed the trail to make assessment in this state doable and begin removing an undue onerous burden on people. And we want to try to keep that program in place for kids, teachers, and parents in the state of Oregon. So to that degree, a new program had precedence over some other programs. But I don't believe in the human resource budget, the corrections budget, the Department of Education budget, you will find very many things that the legislature of those agencies thought were waste or fluff or should have been eliminated a long time ago. We can all face with reality through no fault of our own that we're in a deep budget cut period. Programs that need to stay have to go, and we face that reality, and that's what we're all working with.
Just one more follow-up, and that is that. Again, I come back to the question, which Madam Chair, you indicated was basically, in some respects, rhetorical, and that is, we'll be faced with issues such as advancing of the CAM program and some of these other kinds of programs that perhaps were good ideas at the time while we had larger amounts to spend on them, but are going to have to be determined statutorily whether or not we want to mandate those proceed forward, I think. And that is my concern, sincerely, when we look at some of these budget cut areas, should we be mandating or changing the modification of the mandates that the legislature has given to these various departments? Thank you.
Representative Smith, and then Representative Tamayo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent Bunn, I noticed in your second round of cuts, you list the CAM, and in the third round of the cuts, you list the CAM, the Certificate of Advanced Mastery for high schools. Can you tell me how many high schools have currently implemented the CAM?
We have, I'll describe it this way. We have, I'll describe it this way, and then Clark Brody, who's in the audience and really operates the lead effort on our CAM, if you would like further information, though he wasn't aware, he might come forward, would be glad to come forward and talk a little further. We have a series of what are called 21st century schools, new century schools, that have implemented the prototype of the CAM, all the way from Colton High School, a small high school, to Eugene's high school system in 4J. We have a number of other schools that have implemented, in addition to the new century schools, in ways that have basically transformed the experience of their students in being able to combine
academic and applied work. The Rachel Carson Center in Eugene, for example, has students that go out and work with wetlands, work with companies, work with their various integrated courses, have dropped the dropout rate for at-risk students. Those students we tried to work with you on in the last legislative session in phenomenal ways. In addition to those, schools like Reynolds, David Douglas, the schools throughout the state are doing the CAM. But the implementation time the legislature set up for the CAM is not even in place yet, the time by which schools were to come online. So these schools, in a sense, are ahead of the game. I can provide to you within a day or so an actual number of those schools.
Madam Chair, excuse me, maybe you misunderstood my question.
The percentage of high schools who are fully implemented.
The percentage of high schools who have fully implemented the CAM indeed is very low in the state of Oregon, and I know some schools have not implemented it yet, and they don't know how they're going to implement it because it's quite cumbersome and expensive. Now, is my understanding of the CAM correct when I say that the CAM is an entire body of work that a student puts together, and it can be used for admittance standards into colleges and universities? However, colleges and universities do not look at the CAM for admittance requirements. They look at SAT scores and grade point averages.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that would not be correct. The university system in the state of Oregon, through what's called the PASS system, and the community colleges through what's called the PREP program, have been designing a set of standards that specifically adopt the CIM and CAM standards as a major portion of their admittance into Oregon higher education schools. And the transformation of the K through 16 system in the state of Oregon has moved to a point at which the state board adopted on December 7th streamlined rules for CAM that allow, among other things, high schools in the state of Oregon to do the CIM and CAM at the same time, to have greater flexibility to work with our university system in a way that the universities are excited about. So to reduce that all down, the university system in the state of Oregon has said with a loud and unified voice, the CIM and CAM will be a major foundation of our entrance into the higher education system.
One quick follow-up. With all agencies looking at budget cuts, including K-12 and our university system, I would think that the body of work that is then passed on to the university system in the form of the CAM, universities will have trouble evaluating that, providing personnel to it. I'm looking at a purely practical point of view. Implementing the CAM is very expensive and cumbersome for our K-12 schools.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Smith, this is a dialogue that could take several days, but I want to suggest to you that the state board, the schools in the state of Oregon have done the work toward implementation of the CAM in a way with a phenomenal limitation on resources. And what this issue is all about is higher standards for students in schools in the state of Oregon. Do we want our students to achieve at a higher level? And the universities have said we're excited about the higher level standards that schools K through 12 have captured in the state of Oregon, and we want to be a major partner in that process. In the budget cut process, they have indicated their full intent to move forward with us in that partnership.
Representative Tamant.
Mr. Superintendent, can you tell us, we were talking about the increase in the budget, 12% from the last biennium. What proportion of that would be due to increased enrollment and or the cost of living, the cost of expenses that maintain your service level?
You know, Madam Chair, Representative, in order to be as fully helpful to you as possible and to be completely accurate, what I would like to do if this works for you is provide you by the the end of the day, all of the committee members, a complete listing of what was cost of living, what was student increase, what was new program, and what those new programs were, so that you have that completely before you as you deliberate.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Stan, in your discussion on ranking your percentages, and I'm did you consider the economic impacts? And I'm thinking in particular when I look at the rural health services in your second program, your nursing services program, particularly since Oregon, like the rest of the country, is experiencing really severe critical shortages in nursing. Did you take those kinds of factors in your consideration when you were looking at your rebalancing of your budget line?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, we did. Let me describe a little more of the process we used. As I mentioned to you, we had the heads of each office at the department, along with the remainder of our cabinet, meet and list a series of issues, economic issues, frankly, political issues, the effect on kids, the thin in the soup, all of those things, and they came into play. And we came out with scores of different scenarios, none of which worked, and ultimately came down to these. But yes, we did consider those factors. And there were factors of the economic effects on schools, on regional areas, knowledge that regional programs had already been cut in the last legislative session. All those things were taken into account.
So the shortage of nursing, and I understand someplace in there's some documents out there that suggest that we're probably 1,000 nurses short in our ranking. So when I look at the ranking, that kind of assessment was done in order to try to accommodate two things, not only to continue a program for Facebook that we have to reduce, but also ways that we can mitigate still the other side of the column.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Winters, and we also try to do other things to mitigate. We are working with the community colleges through our professional technical education office to determine how we can help work with shortages of nurses in separate ways also.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bunn. Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent Bunn, you mentioned at the beginning of your remarks stable funding for schools, and I know that you've sat on this side of the dais and have experience on both. Did you have recommendations in that regard as to where we should look for stable funding?
Representative and Madam Chair, members of the committee, when any business, any nonprofit organization, any governmental organization looks at options in a budget downturn period, I think they look at three things. What's our cash reserve? What are the cuts we potentially need to make? And what are our sources of revenue? I think it is irresponsible to consider the cuts that we face without looking deeply and seriously at every one of those three items. I think that makes it incumbent upon the legislature to look seriously at the question of how do we at least temporarily enhance revenue? How do we use some portion potentially of the cash we have available to mitigate this situation, and how do we make very difficult cuts? For example, if Nancy Heiligman will describe later, if we get to the 4% level of cuts, we have the potential of eliminating every elective from our prototype school we've brought forward to you in the state of Oregon. Every elective. That's a pretty serious level of cut. So my recommendation is you look at all three of those things very, very seriously.
Do you have a preference on revenue-raising option or enhancements?
Well, the first thing I would start with revenue-raising is say, is there a way we can make a stronger collection of current revenues? I don't know the answer to that question, but I would certainly look at that. Would, at various times, the Department of Revenue has brought forward proposals for more collection agents. Would that help with that issue? So that's one of the first places I would look. I would look to the 1980s and say, what did a democratically controlled legislature and a Republican governor do together to deal with the revenue issue? Are there lessons for us in that that time frame that we might be able to use. And then I would go to the cash reserves and say, is there a reasonable portion of the tobacco settlement money or the ending balance or other revenue sources, which are today in the neighborhood of anywhere between $200 and $400 million, depending on how you count it. And what would be a responsible thing to do in that area as well?
In the 80s, the most high profile thing I can remember was the income tax surcharge in terms of revenue increases. Do you think that's a doable option at this point in Oregon's economic history.
I think the revenue people would be better able to speak to that than I could. I just urge you to put all options on the table and consider them.
I'm sure I got a couple more questions.
Teachers have indicated to me as I've been in
most of the schools in my school district,
the workloads that they collect from the kids tend to be excessive, and there are mandates that they think we could probably eliminate, that would make their lives easier.
Do you have recommendations in those regards as to what we might be able to do to not only make it easier for teachers, but also save money at the same time?
I do, and we've been making those all along. Over the last several years, we've brought forward to the state board, and as a result, they have adopted recommendations for reductions in work samples. We brought forward to and worked with you in the legislature, the TESA program, to cut down the testing requirements. We spread out the testing around ages to cut down on the workload, for example, at fifth grade. And we have urged the Bush administration, along with other school chiefs across the country, not to require annual testing under the NAEPS testing, but to allow every other year testing. Perhaps one of the single biggest things that could cut the workload of teachers and students, because you can get accurate measurement in every other year testing that is sufficient to do the job. And if we want to cut paperwork costs, dollars, I urge you to join us in asking the Bush administration to do what the school chiefs have asked in cutting that to alternate year testing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Superintendent, I know that you will be raising a discussion about the Common School Fund later, but in the context of the history that has been asked on budgeting, I would like to see a history of the Common School Fund and how it has changed. And I'd like you to go back more than just one biennium, if you would, please. I'd like to see how the Common School Fund has evolved since 1991, when the state took over primary responsibility for funding it.
Madam Chair and Representative Nolan, I'll just quickly distinguish between the Common School Fund and the school fund. The Common School Fund, by the way, will be probably about $30 million short, if not more, this time. We will provide that information, but I would just give you a context that if we had stayed with the property tax over the last 10 years, we would have had about $1 billion more in school funding for schools than we have today. And so we'll give you that 10-year perspective as well as the perspective for the last several years. I was very excited that the last legislature, led by the governor, provided an additional in excess of $100 million as a down payment on the quality ed model. And we have to struggle with, does school funding in a stable way, meaning that in a downturn we take that away or we find a way to keep it whole.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bunn. Some of us have just joined the Legislative Assembly, and while we haven't served on this subcommittee, the education, we probably have some questions tonight. Representative Smith, I think, was going after something that, as a former school board member for 10 years, I just finished that 9 months ago, although it seems like 9 years ago. I had a few questions.
CAM, PASS, and PREP programs
that have been questioned at the local level. There are programs that are constantly being brought out by the Oregon Department of Education that require a great deal of work at the local school district level to maintain a paperwork board and reporting board. It's a constant burden that, as a board member, I always are hearing from my teachers on. They represent a Canopus, I've spoken to it. When I look at the cut you're talking about making here, I sometimes think this might be an opportunity to look at carefully what we're requiring from our school districts as far as reporting is concerned, because frankly, I think there's too much reporting that goes on. Having said that, I'd like to know how you made these decisions. Did you go out to the individual districts and ask for input? Did you have time to do that? I'd like to know where the decision-making process occurred as far as these cuts were concerned.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, what we have done throughout the past biennium is go out to schools in what we call a constant feedback process. We have had, not in the budget cuts, but before that time period, focus groups, met with various educational groups, had people come into the department from the schools and sat with us side by side and said, what is it you need? What are your goals? What do students need today? That has resulted in the reduction of work samples, as mentioned earlier, in the development of the TESA program, in development of the data assurance project that would cut down on paperwork. It resulted in Joyce Benjamin from the department and I going to meet with Secretary Page at the U.S. Department of Education in October to say, let us report one time instead of 77 times, because the largest paperwork burden on local schools in the state of Oregon comes from the U.S. government, and we are piloting and asking the federal government to accept that local schools can report to us and the U.S. government one time instead of 77 times on the same student, because they have different definitions, different data items. So the answer is, we're committed deeply with a passion to paperwork reduction. It's not an overnight process, and we brought it forward to you. We're bringing it forward aggressively to the federal government, and we need to separate the issue of higher standards for kids in schools in a uniform weight, in a way, uniform way, from the unneeded paperwork that may have historically gone with that, and how do we get rid of the paperwork? And the fundamental question, is there a better way to create higher standards for students throughout the state of Oregon than the SIM-CAM? Or is there a way that the SIM-CAM can bring forward the full potential of higher standards that this legislature has asked for?
The question I really wanted answered, because we haven't got time to go on and on, obviously, in making these budget reduction suggestions, did you have an opportunity to talk to the local districts?
Yes, we did.
Not today, but could you present with me later at times if we don't take the committee's time? I'd like to see what those discussions entail.
Okay. I can just describe it in 30 seconds. We did telephone calls at times, we talked directly, we immediately notified when we made changes. But I want to describe to you that when the governor and a particular agency of the governor says, we need your budget cut information in 2 weeks, you don't have the time to do as much as you would like in that regard.
Mr. Bonifar could just interject here. I personally would be very interested, and I think it would be helpful for the members of the committee to have you draft up for us a document that shows where the additional 12% that you got was actually spent. And what I'm interested in is as defined a description as possible about what categories that money went into, what percentage of the 12% that was, and then the dollar amount that's attributed to that. And if you could, if it would be possible to get that information back to the committee by the end of business today, we would very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Just want to follow up a little on when I want to say I commend you on looking at paperwork reduction as a as a priority. You indicated that you were encouraging and that we should encourage the district administration to look at duplication and only have not have that testing. How many tests do we currently give within our district here in Oregon?
We give, first of all, there's some level of local testing. Then there is state testing. Then there is, I'll call it federal testing. It's not really federal testing. It's NAEPS testing. And then there's TIMS testing, which is the international testing. Now, those last two, Oregon has done on a voluntary basis with a large enough sample to be sure that we can calibrate our testing to national testing.
One of the concerns that I have heard from teachers is that they're overburdened with all of the testing, and not just the federal testing, but with all the testing that we do here in the state. And I know that Sim and Cam has added to that burden. When you looked at this, have we looked at some way of integrating really as possible? One way of getting even in Oregon one testing rather than all the multiple testing that we do.
We look at that constantly, and I have to say that Oregon is probably in the best position of any state in the nation to comply with the federal government's proposed requirements for testing. But we, at the Department of Education, we have a passion for streamlining the testing process, and we will continue that effort. If there is anything I believe ultimately would crumble the high standards effort in this state, it is undue burdens by assessment.
In addition to the testing issue, is the administration looking at some of the other paperwork requirements that we require, the field, if you will, or the local school districts, to give to us? I think when you look at paperwork reduction, it goes beyond testing. It goes into all these things that we think of information that we think we need to know, and then it goes on the shelf and we don't use. So are you looking at some of those aspects in paper reduction?
The database initiative that this legislature championed and really led the effort on before I came into office has been a major piece of that. It has helped with paperwork reduction. It has helped local schools be able to make management decisions. I want to remind you that the federal government is one of the areas where we have the biggest problem with paperwork, and we need to work with them aggressively to get a reduction of that paperwork. We collect data at the Oregon Department of Education in large, voluminous amounts to send on to the U.S. government. I went back to the U.S. Department of Education, not winning great friends, several months after I was in office, and began asking what they did with the various paperwork we sent them. You can't get out of the U.S. government today current real-time data to use in making education decisions. It's 4 years old. We have to change that system, and we can, and we will, and we are.
Dan, can you provide us with the number of forms or items to request from the local